Okay, welcome everybody to this July meeting. And I just want to say a few things before we get started. We decided that maybe each meeting, a member of the board would Joyce, and she's our wonderful host for this July's program. I'm glad to see everyone here. And you know what? I have trouble with my computer. And my computer and my printer, they are conspiring against me. So if you look at your program and you're confused, well, I tried to fix it. But every time I fixed it, it got worse. So the first line, those are your tellers, first names in order. Their last are all mixed up. And every time I redo them, the printer just rearranges them. So it's up to you to figure out who's who on the second line. And I'm sticking by that.
It's the L.
It's an alt,
yeah.
Oh, it's to all hail? Are you accusing me of lying? Also, if you're following the soccer final on the phone, don't tell me I'm recording it. I don't know how many other people. Okay, so today is going to be a tall tale. Some of them will be true. Some of them won't be. Who knows? I always tell the truth. And I want you to believe that. We are a free program, but there's donations, and we love donations because it keeps us going.
It does.
Okay. Congratulations to all of you for being here. I love my tellers. This is not my computer, but it also doesn't work with me. John is telling me to look for things that are supposed to be there, and I can't. And Adele, who is much more of an expert than I am, she's going to try to get John on. He's in Maine, you know, taking in the good weather.
Yeah. He is the only one with the good weather.
Our first storyteller, or maybe sometime in between when Adele can get him on, is John Patrick. I'd like to tell you a little bit about John. John's a person who just can't stand the heat. So every time it gets warm, he hops on his bicycle and he heads east to Maine. And he pedals along 3,200 miles, aided by four-foot creatures who run along behind him and nip a little. Feel sorry for his wife, who rides on the handlebars, and she doesn't even have a proper seat. Well, when it gets cold, he'll do the whole thing over, and at about May, he will hop on that bike, put his wife on the handlebars, and hopscotch back to California to enjoy.
Well, I learned.
Okay, I don't see Dwight. He's not here.
Okay.
He had a party, so maybe he forgot. I told him I'd get him out of here by 2:30. Okay. Well, let's skip to our third teller, Suzanne. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Suzanne. Now, here's a lassie of all kinds of talents. She never ventures out in the wilds or at late night party or throws her name in a hat for for a performance. She's just too shy and cautious in her day-to-day pursuits to grasp that golden ring you can find on the carousel. Please welcome Suzanne.
You're doing a lot.
I'm Suzanne, like shoes on. And fortunately, I have my little shoes on today. Yay, if I'm barefoot, you'll forget my name. I had just graduated high school and I was looking to figure out where I want to be in life. Oh, everyone said go to college. So I signed up for Yuba College. It was $15 a semester. First day of my painting class, which I love painting, I met this guy, Roth. Very peculiar. He loved to draw every detail, every nose hair, every pore in your body. But his drawings look kind of like gruesome midnight stories that you would watch on TV when you're already intoxicated. And I am proud to say that Roth and I had a painting class together. And the teacher made a mistake by giving us all of our 12 assignments for the whole semester at the beginning. Well, we jotted them down very furiously, and we decided we're going to make Kathy mad. Make Kathy mad painting. She was a terrible teacher, but she was a really nice person. But we still wanted to make her mad. So what we did is we painted all 12 in just 2 weeks. I mean, he used a tiny brush. I taught him how to use a big brush, almost a house painting size brush. Swoosh, swoosh, swoosh. I painted half a tree in 8 seconds. He was so impressed, fascinated, and a little horrified. But he also picked up the big brush and tried, and he did an amazing job. But after we were done, we got to go to the cafeteria and eat a donut. Yay. And we shared the donut. We wandered the aisles of the art area in the library. But back to the donuts. My mom worked at the college. Now, I moved out when I was 16 years old. So I didn't really have a very close relationship with my mom until I went to college. And then she would be washing dishes. I'd hear the clanks in the background. She'd come out and say, "Are you hungry?" Well, there's not. That's a stupid question. Of course I'm hungry, even though I'm eating donuts. And she would give me a little tap of a hug and tell me she loved me. It was really a nice thing to do. And then she'd say, "Why aren't you in class?" I said, "We're making Kathy mad." And sure enough, we would go back to the class. And on Monday, she'd give us the directions. On Friday, she'd collect the paintings. Then we were in there every day, goofing off for a couple of hours, just playing around for our 4-hour class. And Roth was 5'4". He had dark complexion, a little mustache. He looked a lot like Prince. I mean, a lot. And sometimes people would mistake him and they would come and clamor to him. And he would just look at them. He didn't sign any autographs, but he wouldn't say a word. He didn't want to have his voice revealed. So one day he was telling me that he got picked up by this gorgeous person that took him out to a fancy restaurant. The next week he met a person that took him to an amazing location on the coast. He had another person take him to Las Vegas. I was just wondering, how could he have these amazing dates? I mean, he was cute and all. He did look like Prince. But my boyfriends tended to want to take me to Taco Bell. And napkins were there was no napkin in the lap, except for what I fell out of my bag. It was not exciting. So I got a scholarship my second year of community college. So I went on to Oakland, to California College of Arts and Crafts. The college was about $60,000 a year. It's outrageous. But I got a full scholarship. Well, Roth didn't get in. Well, at least not for a scholarship. He couldn't afford it. I could afford even financial aid because I was 16 or 18 at the time, but I didn't make enough money. I worked at McDonald's for $3.35 an hour. And there's a whole hamburger story, but I'll just tell you, I made money off of selling the leftover hamburgers. And it was great. I mean, they would line up for days, and I'd sell everything for a dollar. Fireworks, anything for a dollar. Crawdads, anything for a dollar. I'd even bought KFC little soft rolls before they went to the biscuits. And I sold 12 of them. They cost me a dollar. I sold 12 of them for $5. I made some money. So I wasn't going to be poor in college. So Roth followed me to Oakland. We moved into this really shabby warehouse slash apartment, and we became best of friends. We not had only painted together, we cooked together, we'd go on adventures, and then we heard Prince is coming to town for the Purple Rain tour. Now, those young people that don't know in the audience, just imagine a very purple man with big ruffles on his sleeves, and he sang like an angel. So we decided to just combine our money and rent a limo. And we rented a limo. He dressed up in purple. He had the ruffles, he had the coiffed hair. And we went there. It was a beautiful concert. They had lights. He came out on a motorcycle. He even got in a bathtub, and purple rain fell down upon him. That was before intermission. We had an amazing show, and it was definitely the best concert of our life. Well, we were going back out to the limo, and then there comes like the 6'6" bodyguard, really buff, and he said, "Come with me." "No, come with me. You've been requested. Your presence has been requested." Okay, because he
Why
was
did you tell your
obviously a
story?
bodyguard. He had the shirt. We followed him. And we went down this long corridor inside the
They
cow
couldn't get
palace.
me on.
Guess what they call the cow
Oh, I'm
palace?
so
They used to
sorry.
carry
They
cows
got
in,
my video,
and
but
it
not my
smelled like
audio.
cows. Again, the
Oh.
concert was great.
Dang.
We were being ushered in
Well,
to a room of greatness. And I mean this because
beautiful.
there across the room, sitting in a fancy chair, I'd like to say a purple throne, but it wasn't a throne, probably a padded chair, was Prince. And he had heard about the rumors that there was a guy in the audience that looked a lot like him. And I was so nervous and was thinking all these wonderful questions I'm going to ask him, you know, the background of his music and why Purple Rain. And the song that the chorus is, "I never want to call you any sorrow, cause you any sorrow. I never want to cause you any pain. I only want to see you laughing in the purple rain." Now, that was a beautiful song and it meant a lot to me. But so when I got up there, I stammered, and Roth just stuck his hand out to shake it. And Prince went forward and touched his shoulder with his shoulder. Not a real hug, but enough to floor us. And so we went home elated in that limo. It was a wonderful time. 5 days later, the man that my boyfriend, Amir, dragged me to the Prince show. He had to see Prince. He had to hear or see this wonderful event that I explained. After a few minutes of listening to the concert, Amir picked me up and dragged me out, like literally forcefully dragged me out. 2 years later, I had had my son, and Roth came over. His favorite singer was Chrissie Hynde. And Chrissie Hynde had a song that I might even reach, can't remember all the words, but that's okay. She talked about standing by him. And I thought, this is my chance. Amir kicked him out of the house. He actually wouldn't even let him through the door. He didn't like his life choices. He didn't want to be around that type of person. And I was floored because he was my friend. I loved him. And I just really was so distraught. And next time somebody holds your hand and pulls you out of someplace, just let go. Purple rain. And don't worry, I have a friend helping me. So here we go, a little interaction.
Oh.
Mary's her fault. Oh, two. Okay.
Okay, because the computer actually is in charge, right? During intermission, we're still going to work on getting John here, but we're going to rearrange the program. So the computer has the last word, and even the first names are not in the correct order. So I would now like to invite someone up who is doing me a favor. She is going to be our poet, but she's not doing what she would like. She's doing me a favor. Christine. Now, Christine has been everywhere and done everything. She's a headliner wherever she goes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you will recognize her here as she's in her complete incognito. But don't worry. Recognize her for her skills and her break through that disguise. Christine.
Yes, ma'am.
I will put on a little bit of chill. Feel cold yet? Little snow. I have to say, this has been a wonderful treat that Joyce gave me a couple of weeks ago. She asked me to do a poem that I'd never seen called The Cremation of Sam McGee by Robert W. Service. So I launched into it, copied it, figured, oh, you know, the poets usually get to hold their stuff in front of them, you know. And then I started reading the poem. And I thought, no, this has got to be acted out. Okay? So bear with me. I have my mother. Oh, I got snow in my mouth. My mom will prompt me if I lose my spot, but hopefully we'll get through it. There are strange things done under the midnight sun by men who moil for gold, and the Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. Now the northern lights have seen queer sights, and the queerest they ever did see was that night on the march of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Now Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows, and why he left his home in the south to roam round this pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold had a hold on him like a spell. And the way he'd say in his homely way, I'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing away over the Dawson Trail. You speak of your cold through a parka fold. It stabbed like a driven nail. Our eyes would close and our lashes froze, and sometimes we couldn't see. It ain't, but the only whimper was Sam McGee. And later that night, we were packed up tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed, and the stars overhead were dancing heel and toe. And he turned to me and he says, Cap, says he, I'll cash in this trip, I guess. But if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request. Well, a pal, he seemed so low, I couldn't say no. And then he said with a sort of a moan, it's this cursed cold, it's got a right hold, and it's chilled me clean through the bone. But being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I'm asking you to swear, foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains. Well, a pal's last need is something to heed, and I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. But God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched in his sleigh and he raved all day about the home in Tennessee. But before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. Now there was no breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that it couldn't be rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, you'll use all your brawn and your brain, but it's a promise is true, and it's up to you to cremate those last remains. A promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. But the days to come, my lips were dumb, and in my heart I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, the huskies would round in a ring, and they'd howl out their woes to the homeless snows. Oh my God, I hated the thing. And every quiet day, that quiet clay seemed heavy, heavier grow. But I went, and the dogs were spent, and the grub, it was getting low. And the trail was bad, and I was half mad, but I swore I would not give in.
Often sing.
And I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge on Lake LaBarge, a derelict there lay. And it's jammed with ice, and I saw on a thrice it was called the Alice May. Well, I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. And then, here, said I, with a sudden cry, is my crematorium. I tore at boards from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. And then some coal I found just lying around, and I've heaped my fuel higher. The flame just soared, and the furnace roared, and a blaze you seldom did see. And then I burrowed a hole in the living coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. And then I made like a hike, because I didn't like to hear him sizzling so. The heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, I don't know why. And the greasy smoke in an icy cloak went streaking down the sky. And then I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with the grisly fear. The stars overhead were dancing about. And I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, I'll just take a peek inside. I'm sure he's cooked, and it's time I looked. Then the door, it opened wide. And there sat Sam, all cool and calm, in the heart of the furnace roar. He had a smile that he wore that you could see a mile, and said, please close the door. I'm fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plum Tree down in Tennessee, this is the first time I've been warm. There are strange things done under the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. And the Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, and the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee.
Thank you for the challenge.
Give her another round of applause. She really worked on that, and you can see all her talent shining through.
Thank you. I really enjoyed learning that. That was something I've never heard before, and I just loved it.
This is a crazy day, but guess who I see coming in the audience? Dwight is here.
Yay!
So, Dwight, please come up. This is a man who's never still. He roams the earth. An unsettled wind, a real nomad, has visited bears in a Russia wilderness, enjoyed the jazz in New Orleans. Think I'll ask him to join me next time I go camping. You see, I bet my soul he can hitchhike a tent so it doesn't fall down at night.
Wait.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I know a little bit of something about tents. I am a poet. Love those stories, but I get a little long-winded. Voices. So every year they do a collection of poems from different authors, and most of them are around here.
Yeah.
Most often they're in our audience too. Lovers' concepts. Love had been in this place for eons, watching it populate. Before these moments that I am about to describe, love was known to be free-flowing, fully here, and everywhere. Thick in the atmosphere was love's energy, unparalleled. Seen as particles of light, if seen at all. The blindness which kept love unseen had become common, so focused on negatives were the inhabitants that few paid any attention to the beautiful things in their world. And this was yet another beautiful day to enjoy. However, on this particular day, love felt an unease never felt before. Life's future had become dire, with no chance of better days ahead. And love deduced an end to the good had arrived in this place. Humanity had become complacent, sedentary, in a hopeless apathy, had decided love was not worth reaching for anymore. Expecting nothing more than fire, brimstone, and the foul smell of discontent, war replaced compromise in this place. An eye for an eye was leaving everyone blind. No one seemed to care that the revolution would end in the natural evolution called extinction. And love did not need to be present to witness that. Forgetting the essence of her being, love began running in circles trying to find an exit to this hell. Attempts to catch up with a life that understood love seemed futile. Panting the pant of an asthmatic was a sign that panic was rising as love searched, thinking she might not ever find the portal to the parallel of which only few even knew existed. It was then that it happened. Awakened describes the lightning bolt of thought that brought to her attention, I am love, here and now. Fear not. Waste no time looking down. Rainbows are not found on the ground. Keep looking up. What you search for will be found. It was then that it happened. clouds parted, revealing a rainbow from which sprang a winged dolphin. Love watched in amazement as it circled and then hovered above her head. Telepathically, Love was invited to ride on the back of this beautiful winged creature. High above the treeless avenues and smog-hugging skyscrapers, she was took straight into the stars. They soared straight through the portal hidden behind the rainbow, arriving in a place that can only be described as Shangri-La. And Love felt at home at last. Alas, she could not stay. Elsewhere, there was still work to be done. Love was told she was needed on this place called Planet Earth. Maybe there, she hoped, they would be more receptive to Love's concepts. Yahoo! I'm a romantic.
Yep. Tall tale.
That's why they got me, right? Because I'm tall.
There you go.
This is called The Nomad. I am again beginning to get that tingling beneath my feet that makes it hard to stay in my seat. Been sedentary for quite a while, busy being present in my here and now. But now I feel I am again beginning to get that tingle beneath my feet, making it hard to stay in my seat. And although I love you, I've got to go, for at heart, I am just a nomad.
Yes.
That got in there. This was yesterday's reading. Okay. This is called The Nomad Traveler Extraordinaire. Introduction. For those who know me not, I am called the Nomad Traveler Extraordinaire. I have entered this fifth realm in search of unknown life. Excuse me as I turn over this rock. Where I travel next is a question that has no answer. I am always just short of lost as I move blindly down the mysterious path of the unknown. Never knowing what I will encounter next, I'll find out as the mystery unfolds. Excuse me, as I investigate that interesting stone to your left, and the search for extraordinary life requires I look behind every corner and under as many stones as possible, and then, to my surprise, the meeting. I was stunned by a voice booming but gentle asking, "What are you looking for? Maybe I can help." Over my shoulder, I see a somewhat like me but not unlike me life form blinking three eyes. It too was searching under stones, eating what it discovered, which tried to scurry away. I am called the Nomad, Traveler Extraordinaire, in search of the unknown. Excuse me, I say to this being, as I returned to my search, turning over stones. You're invited to stay with me, I say, and so one became a party of two. And later that evening, we sat about a firelight. Later that evening, we sat by firelight sharing thoughts. She, at least I believe it was a she, confided to also being a explorer. I listened inquisitively to her story. No more was added, so silently we sat silently watching moths circling the fire and then enter, never to return. And I wondered if they will reincarnate as one of the creature found under that stone, or one of she, or one of me, or maybe it will reincarnate as God. Laying to rest after a long day of trekking, of turning over heavy stones, I fall into a fitful sleep and I dream and I dreamt of a floating island covered by swirling fog and fields of marigolds, and although nothing looked familiar, I would have bet my third eye I'd been there before. Breathing as easy, yet gravity was missing. I found myself choking back the desire to panic, reasoning there's nothing here to panic about. Nothing was wrong, but what was right? I awoke with a start, wondering, am I failing to recognize what is wrong or right, merely different? Have I come upon different and failed to recognize it? How dare I call myself the nomad traveler of islands far and wide in search of the unknown, failing to recognize different? And with that embarrassing revelation realized and accounted for, I moved forward with a higher respect due to different. Once upon a time, there was a time, Earth's rotation reversed, leaving all with an unnatural high from a lack of gravity. Rolling out of a warp of time, recognizing nothing arrived at a place. What did I read? I'm sorry. I'll slow down. Rolling out of a warp of time, recognizing nothing, arriving at a place called now and then, wanting to return back to then, right now, if it were possible, looking to the left and then to the right. Everyone seemed oblivious of what was obvious to me, and all were experiencing an unnatural high from the lack of gravity created by Earth's reverse rotations. You know, weird, huh?
Interesting concept.
Well, okay. This is my last one because I know you guys got stuff to do. This is called There's Nothing New. Part one, birth. There's nothing new in the assurance we exude. I would like to believe I know what I perceive, or am I again being deceived? What I believe is life exists because of pheromones and physiological entities persuading procreation, drawing me to you and you to me. Fighting it, though we might, life continues to exist despite our disrespectful existence. Clearly, there are more questions than answers in the search of who I think I am. All I know for sure is I feel deja vu watching life unfold one day at a time. Who's to say if we will ever know more than we currently think we know? And I believe we must accept there are things in this world that cannot be explained, cannot be denied. From that truth, we cannot hide. Part two, rebirth. There is nothing new within the rays of our life-supporting star that was not here eons before. The first question was asked, and now answers await to be discovered, which we have yet to uncover. Life's cycle of reincarnation, reinvented, produced atom compounds, re-emerging as different. Recapitulating over and over. When we think it's over, it just begins again, then again, with no end. There's nothing new in this life-supporting water today that was not here eons before. And so who's to say? Hundreds of centuries before this day, I was not... I know that word, but I can't say it because my tongue won't fix it. The green stuff of flora. And you were a wearer of fins or a breather of the hydrogen compounds of oxygen. Who's to say when walking through the door of reincarnation, if we emerged as an amoeba, insect, man or woman? How can we just be so sure of things we believe when clearly we don't know how to live holistically in this here and now within life's existence? Part 3, Armageddon. There is nothing new happening under our sun as we pass time. Humans continue to carelessly poison and exhaust resources despite repeated warnings. Gross exploitation for gross profits equal gross waste, while those that can pack for new lands to continue their exploitation. The question is it too late to save our own bacon? I see the smoke. Have we run out of time? I smell something is burning. I feel the heat, or is that global warming? What I believe is this: it's not too late to turn into new frequencies of understanding, bring new thought to old issues. It takes most of a lifetime to learn. True power resides in times gone by. And who's to say we can't learn from the lessons of time before to shut the door on a impending Armageddon? Through trust of the process, no longer do we need to fear the future. We merely need to heed the lessons of the past. Have we not heard this before? Part 4, New Birth. There is nothing new. Never has been, never will be. It is within the magical spirit called belief in self, which accesses the enhanced powers necessary to garner the creative strength to save our world. Who's to say when I feel a poem coming on, it's not the answer? Who's to say that it can't be done? Just because you need proof doesn't make it any less so, knowing that I can't tell you what I know because there are no words does not make it any less so. I also know is a need, excuse me, all I need to know. And so even if with me you do not follow, off I go to help rebuild this world. I am the Nomad. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. John, can you pause for pause the recording for us for an intermission? Okay, some announcements. There's a black hat over there on the table with white squares. Okay, Adele,
yeah.
You want to try holding the mic over there? Okay, wait a minute. Did you come up and then I'll...